You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Tim McMaster. Going around the American League East, the Blue Jays and Yankees are battling injuries at the top of the division. Meanwhile, the Orioles are hanging on to slim playoff hopes. We kick things off this week checking in with Gregor Chisholm and the Jays. Obviously, the Blue Jays still leading the way in the American League East. They took 3 of 4 from the Yankees last weekend, but Troy Tulowitzki goes out with the injury in such a weird play on Saturday. Is this a situation when you look at his injury history and how much time he's missed in his career that everybody's kind of holding their breath in Toronto?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the Blue Jays originally said 2 to 3 weeks that he would be out, and you know, that really puts him in the dangerous territory of being supposedly back at the very end of September and early October, and basically, you know, the end of the regular season right there. So you're talking about a very small window that if there's any kind of setback or if the healing process doesn't go as quickly as they would hope, you're talking about the danger of missing the postseason as well. And you know, I think the Blue Jays are trying to be cautiously optimistic, but even if Troy Tulowitzki does make it back in September or at the very beginning of October, he's going to have to play through quite a bit of discomfort as well. That was something Alex Anthopoulos talked a lot about in New York, was that there's going to be pain there. It's not, even if he comes back, it's not going to be pain-free. And so, you know, it's probably unrealistic to think that, you know, when he does, if he does make it back, that we're going to see the Troy Tulowitzki that most people are used to seeing. I think it'll be a bit of a different player. But more than anything, the Blue Jays just need and want to get him back on the field, because there's no question that it's a big loss for that team.
They went out and acquired Darwin Barney from the Dodgers, obviously to help add depth, but he wouldn't be eligible for the postseason. So when you look at this team right now, what is the answer as far as that middle infield goes when you look to October?
Right. Well, it's going to be Ryan Jones every day at shortstop for now, and then it'll be Cliff Pennington every day at second base. And that's where the move that they acquired Pennington in the middle of August, you know, a lot of people were kind of scratching their heads a little bit at the time as to why they made that move. Well, and this is kind of exactly why they did it. You know, he's not going to provide you a whole heck of a lot with the bat, but he is a very good defender, a veteran player. Knows what he's doing out there. So he's going to get an opportunity now to play every day. And then when you're looking ahead to October, really the only backup infielder that they would have would be Munenori Kawasaki, which is kind of interesting because Munenori Kawasaki is with the team right now, but he's really far down the depth chart. I mean, when they brought in Barney, he's a guy who's played over the last few days, and he's played ahead of Munenori Kawasaki. But as you touched on, I mean, Barney's not going to be eligible for the postseason. So that backup job, if Tulowitzki's not available, would go to Kawasaki.
Kawasaki, obviously a fan favorite up there in Toronto, but maybe not a guy you want getting meaningful at-bats in October. I guess the good news when you look at the situation is Ryan Goins has been hitting great. So even though, you know, you lose Troy Tulowitzki, you also have the rest of that lineup around him. So offensively, obviously, it's not what you had with Tulo, but it's not like suddenly the Blue Jays are without run producers.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the one thing to keep in mind through all this is the run that the Blue Jays have gone on since Tulowitzki got here at the end of July. I mean, a lot of that was out Tulowitzki really hitting the way that everybody expects him to. And, you know, I think the logical expectation is that Tulowitzki was going to turn things around and really start swinging the bat. But he really hadn't done that yet. You're talking about a guy who was hitting in the low 200s, had shown flashes of power, but hadn't really put everything together. Now, the thing is that opposing pitchers still had to treat him like Troy Tulowitzki, and it was another middle-of-the-order bat. And when you take him out of that, I mean, it really does kind of make the bottom of that order look quite a bit different when you have Pennington down there, and you just don't have quite the same amount of depth. But offensively, they should be okay. The fact that they lost Edwin Encarnacion for a few days kind of hurts a little bit, but overall, the depth of that lineup is really something where you should be able to afford losing a guy like Tulowitzki and still be able to put up some runs.
A tough loss on Tuesday night to the Braves in walk-off fashion, but Mark Burley encouraging. He allows one earned run over five innings after he had obviously had a rough stretch. The team was giving him some extra time off. Did he feel like the time off helped him going into Tuesday?
I don't think so. I mean, it's a very interesting case with Burley. I mean, he's normally a very laid-back, joking guy with the media. After that start, was the first time really that I've ever seen him kind of really be frustrated. He limited the post-game scrum to two questions, and then he quickly walked away. And I think what he wanted to do was really avoid a lot of the questions about the layoff, about what he's been doing with. Because for the most part, this is a guy who's maintained all along that he's been healthy. It's really been from the Blue Jays side that they've tried to push him back, and they were the ones who wanted him to go get the cortisone shot. Burley's maintained all along that he was ready to take the ball every fifth day. And so I think he's a little bit upset that his routine has been interrupted the way it has. I think if this was any other season, you would have seen him continue to take the ball every fifth day. But from the club's perspective, I also get that as well, because Burley hasn't really looked like himself now for a few weeks. And, you're right. It was kind of a little bit of a step in the right direction in his return. The fact that he only gave up that one earned run over five was positive, but there was still a lot of hard contact early in that game before he kind of settled in. So it's going to be interesting to see where he goes over the next couple of weeks, because he's a guy who's really going to want to pitch well over the final stretch to really lock down a spot on the postseason rotation, because as things stand right now, I don't think that's necessarily guaranteed, and that's not something you ever would have thought you would have said about a guy like Burley.
Maybe the biggest Subway Series we've seen in the regular season coming up over the weekend, and we are certainly going to get to that. But let's start with the recent history here with the Yankees. And on Tuesday night, obviously a tough one against the Rays, but Alex Rodriguez has an MRI, has a bone bruise, and then he goes out, his first at-bat, slugs home run number 32. It seems like nothing can stop this guy right now.
No, I think that's a really good sign for the Yankees, because obviously they were concerned enough to send him over to Tampa and check that out. They think it happened on Sunday when you saw him break for home plate and score with that head-first slide. And, 40 years old, you don't bounce back quite the way you used to. So they were concerned about that. He obviously complained about it a little, but it wasn't enough to keep him out of the lineup. And, a bone bruise you can play through, especially when you're DHing. And I think that's part of the reason why they're so fortunate that he embraced the idea of DHing and not needing to play the field, because I think we've talked about it a bunch. There's a lot more that goes into playing the field than just the nine innings you're out there. You take a lot of early work. You're bouncing around on the field. You're diving for ground balls, all that. I think the fact that Alex has been able to take his entire time and focus on those four or five at-bats a night and really give the Yankees his A swing those four or five times, I think that's really come in handy for them. And, so he's probably going to get a little break coming up this weekend. As I said, they don't want him to play the field, so he'll be in pinch hitter duty once again at Citi Field. But earlier in the month when the Yankees were in Atlanta, they did the same thing, and they thought that rejuvenated him. So it could wind up being a blessing in disguise to have him on the bench and out of the lineup, and then you always have that dangerous choice late in the game.
Adam Warren made his first start since June for the Yankees on Tuesday night against the Rays. Obviously, the team loses the game. Warren goes four innings. Did you like what you saw from Warren over those four innings and what the Yankees can expect from him the rest of the month?
I liked what I saw in innings three and four more than what I saw in the beginning. I think that, it's always tough going back and forth. Even though he's done both roles, he started, he's relieved, I think there's always an adjustment period there. And he said that it took until about the third inning for him to settle down and start to remember what was going on there. So I think that as he got later in the game, he was pleased with how his legs responded, how his stamina felt. He actually felt like he could have probably gone a little further than the four innings, which is a good sign for the Yankees. His next time out, he'll probably be in the area of 80 to 85 pitches. And, it's not ideal to be building up a guy in the middle of a pennant race, but with Evaldi's injury, they really had no choice there. So this time out, 80 to 85 pitches for Adam Warren, that's a little more like a real start. And then after that, the training wheels are completely off, and he should be back to full-blown starting.
The big injury news this week, obviously Mark Teixeira, an injury that It's really odd the way it all came about, and that it just seemed like he was going to be out day to day a little bit, and then suddenly we learn that it's actually a fracture in the leg and he's done for the year. How much of a shock has this been for the Yankees that this has kind of developed the way it has?
It's surprising, and I think that's the reason that Brian Cashman always says you treat the patient and not the MRI, because he went for, and remember, these are the best doctors in the world. There's millions of dollars on the line. He was in the MRI tube twice, and he still couldn't find the fracture, but Mark Teixeira knows his body better than an MRI machine does, and he was saying there's something not quite right here. I don't feel ready to come back, and so they put him in there the third time, and lo and behold, there it was. So I think you go on the information that you have to begin with, and the information said it was a bone bruise, but Mark Teixeira knows his body. He knows what he can play on. He knows the difference between pain and just some general soreness, and clearly this was pain. So he thought the day that he did it, he said, I thought I broke my leg, just like Jermaine Dye did in the playoffs a few years ago. It turned out that was exactly what he did.
So the Yankees obviously need players to step up with Teixeira out of there. And on Monday night, Brian, how about Slade Heathcott? After they tie the game late, Slade Heathcott, I think, kind of shocks Yankee Nation with a go-ahead home run.
Yeah, a surprising contribution. If you told me Slade Heathcott was going to come off the bench and hit a big home run to win a game as the Yankees are fighting for division, I don't know what I would have put the odds on that, especially it was his first at-bat since late May against the big league pitcher. So I think, but he was really working on coming back. He got down after he got sent down. Obviously, he had the quadriceps injury that kind of short-circuited him there. He couldn't play for a few months there. But when he got down to Scranton, he was kind of thinking about, how do I get back to the big leagues? Do I keep a positive attitude, or do I sit here and pout the rest of the season? And obviously, he took the right road. He got his focus together. He was driven to come back to the big leagues, and he got an opportunity in a small spot. So I think, look, the Yankees have always liked Slade Heathcott. The problem's been keeping him on the field. You've seen a little bit in short glimpses here this year of why they like him so much, the energy he brings to the game, what he can contribute, and now he's got a big moment in a September pennant race to put on his resume.
Yeah, that was a big moment to finish a game in which C.C. Sabathia started, and what an encouraging start for C.C. Sabathia it was. He looked great. When we talked last week about C.C. coming back from the injury, you said you expected him to go with that same approach, that he would leave it all on the field, he wouldn't hold anything back, and you'd see where it would get him. He certainly did that on Monday night.
It looked great, and I think there's a lot more confidence with C.C. now that he's got that brace on his right knee. He said it's something he doesn't feel like he has to hold back or wonder if on this pitch or that pitch it's going to hurt the knee. It keeps him stable. He can stay over his body when he delivers, and that's huge for a pitcher. It's huge for a pitcher to be able to repeat the mechanics with confidence, and right now that's what the knee brace is doing for Sabathia. I think that in the back of his mind, you got to wonder, why didn't I do this earlier? Was this an option in April or May? He probably should have done it. The year might have been a lot different, but there's no rolling the clock back. CeCe's got it together now. He looked really good against the Rays, and the Yankees need him to keep building on that, because with Eovaldi's injury, and you know, we're talking about building Adam Warren back up to the rotation, they need some sure things here. And if CeCe can be a sure thing for them, he certainly wasn't earlier in the year. If he can come back and have a strong finish, that's going to be huge for this team.
Ian, the team looked like they were kind of on their way to third place until they got to Baltimore this week, a tough series with the Orioles. But let's start on really the big news of the week, the bright news of the week. David Ortiz hits home runs number 499 and 500 in the same game. Obviously, a huge moment for him, a huge moment for this team.
Yeah, you know, it's great to see David get that milestone. He's had such a great career with the Red Sox, and you know, other than really, Ted Williams, it's hard to think of any hitter who's had more of an impact on the Red Sox than David Ortiz, and he's the only guy in team history to hit to win three championships and three World Series. So, I know it meant a lot to him. And the amazing thing about it was just how quickly he got there. I mean, he went into the season needing, I think it was 34 home runs he needed to hit this year. And you're saying, okay, it could be iffy whether he does that. And he gets off to a real slow start to the season, and just to hit the 26, 27 home runs since the beginning of June, like he has, it's been amazing to watch that display of power.
I think maybe the one disappointing thing was that he did it in St. Petersburg. You were there, obviously. What was the atmosphere like? Obviously, his team comes onto the field, they make a big deal about it, but not a packed house, I'm guessing, in St. Petersburg.
Yeah, they actually, you know, for whatever reason, they had a pretty good crowd there that night. But, yeah, you would have liked to have seen it done in Boston. That's found a way where he said so many big home runs in his career. But you could see the genuine, you know, affection his teammates felt toward him at that moment. They were all really happy to see him do it. He saw guys kind of jump over to the dugout railing to come congratulate him on the field. So it was a good moment. I know it meant a lot to David Ortiz, even though it did happen on the road. And I'm sure they have something cooked up for him at Fenway when the team returns home next week.
A couple of tough games in Baltimore to open up a series against the Orioles, but not all bad news during those games. When you look at Monday night, obviously the team loses 2-0, but another impressive performance from Eduardo Rodriguez. And really, his last five starts, it seems like he's really become more consistent. He's 3-1, a 1.72 ERA in those five starts. He's been great at moments all year, but does it seem like the consistency has really come together over the last month or so?
Yeah, Eduardo is simply getting better command of his pitches now. And, you know, I think before when he would get into a jam, he would just have a tendency to just try to overthrow with his fastball. And now he's just pitching, and he's not getting overwhelmed by the moment. And, yeah, for him to put five really good starts in a row together, he's only got a couple more left now. They're going to be careful with his innings limit. But this is a huge thing for the Red Sox for next year to have Eduardo Rodriguez feeling so good about himself. And, you know, it really looks like he could be an upper echelon starter in the American League, you know, by next year. I don't think that's a stretch. I think he could be a 2 or 3 starter by next year. You know, you don't want to put too many expectations on a young guy, but he's, you know, he's given the Red Sox a lot of hope, you know, in the coming years with the way he's pitched this year.
Last time we talked about the possibility of Rich Hill getting a start for this team, and he did that, and he goes out, fires 7 scoreless innings, 10 strikeouts. It was his first big league start since way back in 2009. What was working for Rich Hill in that start?
Yeah, really just the life on his fastball. And he also had a good curveball and a good changeup and just the mix of pitches. And just for a guy who hadn't started in the major leagues in 6 years to come out and throw, you know, I don't think anybody was expecting Rich Hill to come out and throw that kind of game. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he does this weekend when he pitches again in Toronto to see if he can kind of build on that and see, you know, he might be an option for teams, you know, whether it's the Red Sox or somebody else, he could be option as a depth starter next season, which is a great story considering that this guy was, you know, designated for assignment, released by the Washington Nationals in late June, and here he is, you know, pitching like that. So, yeah, looking forward to watching his next time out to see if he can build off it.
Now, Joe Kelly had been pitching so well for this Red Sox team. He had the long win streak going, but Tuesday night he allows 4 runs. He doesn't get out of the third inning in Baltimore. He actually leaves the game with shoulder fatigue. Did this come up quickly, or has he been kind of feeling that fatigue over the last few starts?
Not the last few starts. Obviously, Kelly had been pitching so well, but I think maybe, since his last start in between, I don't think he felt great last week. And you know, he hoped that by the time he took the mound last night, the adrenaline would take over and he would get loose. He simply couldn't get loose. And Kelly never really looked comfortable in that game, so I think the Red Sox did a smart thing getting him out of there, you know, before he injured himself seriously. So they're going to reevaluate him and have a course of action. I'm not sure if Kelly will pitch again this year or not, but, you know, certainly he's had a great finish to the season and another potential building block for next year. So I think you have to be cautious with Joe right now to make sure he doesn't cause any significant damage to his shoulder.
Yeah, because he's one of those guys that, despite how disappointing a season overall this has been for the Red Sox, when you look at the month of August, the month of September, there's so many kind of bright things you can kind of look forward to for next year, and he's certainly one of those. You don't want to do any damage to the chance of a guy who looks like he's going to be a solid part of that rotation next year.
No, and, you know, like you said, for Kelly to be demoted to AAA in June and to come on and win 8 starts in a row, pretty great story. And he has had runs like this before in his career with St. Louis, so you hope that this is the Joe Kelly you're going to have going forward, kind of a guy who gives you a real competitive outing every start rather than the guy who just sort of couldn't keep the team in the game earlier in the season. So, yeah, you just keep him healthy, and he's still a young guy. He's 26 years old, and hopefully a key part of that team for next year.
So Joe Kelly may be shut down for the season. It's official that Junichi Tozawa will be shut down for the rest of the season. And this is a guy who's been such a workhorse for this team. 71 appearances the last 2 years. He was over 60 this year. How much of his, I guess, recent struggles can you kind of chalk up to just so many innings over the last few years? And how much of it do you think is because he was kind of thrown into that closer's role late in the season after Koji Uehara went out?
Yeah, I don't think it had a ton to do with the closer's role. I just think that there was a drop-off in his stuff the last few weeks. And, you know, these Japanese guys, they're real proud. They don't want to make any excuses. They don't want to admit that, you know, the workload had anything to do with it. But I have to think that just the cumulative effect of all those games he's pitched. Plus, he went deep into October also in 2013. You have to think it's had some impact. And you saw that with Koji last year, where he got tired late in the year. And Koji came back strong this year before he broke his hand there and kind of a freak injury. So you hope it's the same thing with Junichi, where he, you know, he uses this rest to his benefit, has a little bit of a head start in his offseason, and comes back like the strong setup guy he's been you know, for the Red Sox really the last 3 years.
And, Bill, the Rays right now hosting the Yankees for a three-game series, kind of do or die if they're going to hang on to any playoff hope. On Monday night in the series opener, a tough loss for the Rays, but what a performance by Erasmo Ramirez on the hill. He takes a no-hitter into the eighth inning against a talented Yankees lineup. What did you see from Ramirez that impressed you the most in that start?
Well, like he's done all year, he mixed his pitches well, and he kept them off balance, had good command of the strike zone. J.P. Arencibia caught him that night and said that one of the things he was doing a couple times, he started Yankees hitters off with first pitch strike on a curveball, which really kept them off balance. So, you know, if I know it's been a disappointing season in a lot of respects for Rays fans, but this is one guy I think that they really found the gym in. You know, they picked him up right at the end of spring training, and all he's done is pitch well. After, you know, two bad outings to start the season, and since then he's been gold.
Yeah, absolutely. So a tough loss for the Rays on Monday, but then they bounce back on Tuesday, and it's always fascinating when a little injury ends up paying off for a team in a weird way. And we talked about Nick Franklin last week and what he has to prove here in September, obviously having a tough season with the injuries and struggles. He comes in for Asdrubal Cabrera after an injury on Tuesday, and then he smacks the big go-ahead two-run homer. What does a moment like that in a game like that do for a guy like Nick Franklin?
Well, I think it did well for him, obviously, because he's had a disappointing year. He was supposed to make the team out of spring training, and he had the oblique problem, which set him back. And then once he finally did get with the team early in the season, that just wasn't there, so they sent him down to Durham, and he spent the rest of the year there. Coming back up, I guess you get a little affirmation of, you know, the work he did down at AAA. I asked Kevin Cash last night if he's part of the plans next year, and I definitely think he'll be in the mix for shortstop. Don't know if they'll bring back Cabrera yet or not, but you know, I would think you're going to be looking at maybe Cabrera. Maybe they're going to let Beckham and Tim Beckham and Franklin fight it out for sure.
Yeah, and the power Franklin can kind of provide from that middle infield spot is impressive. It was a no-doubter on Tuesday night. He even took a second to kind of look at it, I noticed, before flipping the bat. It was neat to see a guy that's had a tough season have a stretch like that. Now, Cabrera, with the injury, day-to-day, do you know when the team expects to see him back in the lineup?
Right now, we're just hearing day to day, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, they're not saying they're out of it, but you know, they basically have to win 18 games to get to, you know, their last 18 games to get to 88 wins. So, you know, I think probably it would be a good sign would be if they were able to make it to 500. But having said that, I think you're going to see a lot of the young players towards the end of the season here, because they, you know, you got a good opportunity here to see what they can do, give them a chance in major league games to see. Have a better idea what you have going in the next season.
Another one of those young players is Steven Souza Jr. He's back in the lineup after missing over a month. He's got some power numbers, 15-plus homers this season. The average, obviously, is a little bit low. Do you get the feeling that the Rays like what they've seen from him in this rookie season? Obviously, they made the trade to get him in the offseason in part of that blockbuster deal. He had the big moment for the Nationals on the final day of the season last year, preserving the no-hitter for Zimmerman. But overall, do you like what you've seen from Souza in his rookie season with the Rays?
I think so. I mean, he's another guy, though, who's been hurt a lot this year, so it's kind of hard. In fact, one time, the first time he went on the disabled list, he was just coming out of a slump right when he got put on the disabled list. And, you know, I think that was a moment there where I would have really liked to see what he could do after he had weathered a slump, kind of figured out what he was doing, got back on his feet, and then he gets hit in the hand. I think it's there. I think he showed enough of it that, you know, maybe next year he comes in and you really start to see the Rays really get the dividends out of what they thought they traded for.
And, Brittany, the Orioles playing better baseball over the past week. They win a series over the Royals. They've clinched a series over the Red Sox. Is the atmosphere in the clubhouse, is the spirit of this team up a little bit the way they're playing lately?
Yeah, I think so. I think they knew they weren't as bad as they were over that rough 18-game stretch, and they're kind of trying to get back into this thing a little bit, scratching and clawing their way back in.
Yeah, they certainly are, and really some amazing moments over the last week when you look back at last Friday, two grand slams in one inning, Nolan Reimold and Steve Clevenger. Orioles hadn't done that since 1986, and it's the type of thing that, like, you know, when you look back on this season, I think fans will remember.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny. It had only been done about eight times in major leagues, and that inning was so long that a lot of the players didn't realize the two grand slams came in the same inning. So it was pretty cool to see. It's not something you're going to see every day, not something you may see again for a really long time. And I agree, there's been a lot of feel-good wins for the Orioles, particularly against the Royals, because that was the team that swept them and ended their season last year in the ALCS.
Yeah, a little bit late, but still a hint of revenge there. When you look at this team right now and some players coming back, Jonathan Scope missed 2.5 months, obviously, with the knee injury. On Sunday, he hits a couple of home runs for the O's. 14 homers in 69 games now in his second major league season. Do the Orioles like what they've seen from him as far as this year and the limited time that he's been able to play?
Of course. I think when you look at Scope and you look at his home runs over games played, you're probably talking about a 30-home run guy? So they're really excited for him. I mean, obviously it was unfortunate he missed so much time, but you've seen that raw power that's there. You've seen the athleticism at second base. He's a guy who's just going to continue to get better for them. So the future is very bright when it comes to Jonathan Scope.
And Miguel Gonzalez threw off flat ground this week. Buck Showalter saying that, I love the way Buck put it, he'd love for Gonzalez to be one of his starters in the playoffs. How important is it for him to show that he's healthy here heading into the offseason if it isn't for heading into October?
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, the Orioles are still holding out hope that they're going to be a team that's there in the postseason. But for Miguel Gonzalez, I think just to end a really disappointing season on an okay note, knowing that he's healthy enough, getting a few more innings under his belt, will probably go a long ways in helping him mentally. I think physically, he's a guy who, after he gets maybe a couple bullpen sessions, because of how late we are in the season, I think he'll be able to probably avoid any kind of affiliate game. You know, there's no affiliates really playing. They might do a sim game, but I think if Miguel Gonzalez stays on track right now, he probably will make at least one more start towards the end of the season.
Here at MLB.com, we're revealing the MLB Awards. It's a program that we do here in the offseason, and there's all sorts of awards, Brittany, but one of them is Best All-Around Player, and Manny Machado is one of the nominees. And it struck me when I saw it because I feel like despite how good Manny Machado is on a day-to-day basis, is it fair to say that from a national standpoint, he's still maybe underrated and people outside of Baltimore don't really understand just how good he is?
I would agree with that. I think Baltimore in general is not a huge media market, so nationally a little bit you don't get it as exposed, but watching him every day, I mean, he's so good defensively, offensively, really having a career year in almost every aspect of his game. So I think it's fair to say he's one of the best everyday players in the big leagues, and when you look at how young he is, it's scary how high his ceiling could truly be.
This has been MLB.com's Extras, looking inside the American League East. Tune in again next week.